Welcome to the Tim Fowler Show, where production is paramount and we discuss the tools, time, and people associated with getting jobs done and making a profit. On today's episode of the Tim Fowler Show, we will be talking about moisture control with the help of special guest Bill Robinson of Train to Build in New Orleans, Louisiana. Alongside Tim Fowler, I'm your co-host Steve Wheeler. Here is the Tim Fowler Show.
Hey everyone, Tim Fowler here, and this is the Tim Fowler Show. Just a quick note. Because of the coronavirus situation, we're doing all of the recordings from our homes. And so there may be a dog bark or a kid open a door or somebody drops a glass or something like that. So just please forgive us for that. But we wanted to keep the podcast going. And so here we are. So, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about the skills gap and training and finding people and that sort of thing. And I think sometimes we forget that a lot of what we do is just technical stuff, right? So we're going to start having a few folks on to discuss more of the technical side of what we do. Now, as we do this, I want all of the listeners to understand that I know, Steve knows, our guest today knows, that a lot of the technical stuff is regional by nature, okay? Like insulation values is regional by nature. And I think we'll find out a little bit, but I think to some degree what we're talking about today is a little bit regional. But what we're trying to do is to get some information out there so that people are better equipped to ask the right questions and to at least find out what's important in their area. So I met our guest today through his wife, Kathy, who edited my book, The Lead Carpenter Handbook, many years ago now. And then he started being a presenter at the Journal of Light Construction live shows, where I have the privilege of being there as well. So for those of you who have been there, he's the presenter on the show floor. He's always got a bandana on, looks like an American flag. And that way you'll know, Bill Robinson, a lot of you have met him. So his specialty has evolved over the years, and probably because he has lots of skills, but he's always been a consistent feature at the show. So I know for me, these JLC live shows have been a primary educator for me in terms of technical ability and advances in technology. And so I would encourage people, if you have the opportunity, to go to one and get involved in some of the training that happens on the show floor. So our guest is going to help us a little bit today with moisture control. So Steve, let's get started.
Okay. So Bill Robinson is currently worked in New Orleans, providing his experience to manufacturers, builders, and homeowners to help them build or rebuild healthy, durable, and efficient homes. Before returning to Louisiana in 2008, Bill was a general contractor in California, and before that, he worked as a commercial diver. Yes, deep sea all around the globe on oil support services. Back to today, Bill is working to try and keep up with builders and homeowners' expectations with the specialty of managing moisture. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Okay, so Bill, I tried to tell everybody how great you are, but let's just tell us a little bit about what you do now, and particularly as it relates to training, maybe some hands-on work, and I believe you're doing some charity work as well. Give us a little rundown on all that.
Well, I got my fingers in a lot of pies or wear a lot of hats, although usually it's normally just a bandana underneath all of that. And so kind of a little background, I think, helps a little bit in that, you know, I was a commercial diver, worked in all over the world in oil field applications for 15 years. And when we did that, first of all, we were working sometimes as deep as 500, 600, 700 feet. Wow. And so we had to think about what we were doing. We had to plan our dives. We did a lot of training. I went to a two-year diving school and then started out at $32 an hour as a helper before I was able to work my way up into being a saturation diver and all that. But the point was, is that we planned things out, we thought things out, and we worked them out. And when I quit diving back in the middle 80s, one of the things that I noticed was that construction was pretty scattered and pretty fragmented. And I remember one day I was out on a floor. And by the way, I was raised up in Indiana doing construction work, but as a kid. So I was just, I just had a shovel and a hod carrier, and I didn't have anything beyond that. But we were doing a concrete finishing thing, and the lead carpenter was in a hurry to get home, as they often are. And so we started finishing the concrete before it was really ready to be finished with steel trowel. And I'm out in the middle of this concrete on some knee boards, moving a piece of trowel around. And I had this feeling of, oh man, this doesn't feel good. I don't know what I'm doing. And then because I had been a pretty good commercial diver for 15 years, I thought, no, wait a minute. Now I am not useless. I just don't know what I'm doing. And so from that, what I decided to do was, okay, training is key here. Training is critical. And so now, you know, as a carpenter solves their problems with a hammer and a nail, I believe we can solve all of our problems with training. And I want to kind of touch back on something. I just listened to one of your podcasts recently, and you talked about some of the books. And the whole idea, there's a book called The Fifth Discipline that is also worth reading. And what I like about that book is he talks about being a learning organization. And most of that stuff is way over my head. But the point comes back to me is that if we're not learning and we're not advancing with things are going, we're falling behind. And so today, you know, what we look at is houses that are high performance. There's all kinds of insulation with continuous exterior insulation and lower, you know, air leakage, blower doors, all those kinds of things. And we're not keeping up with it very well. And then one more thing on that too is that we see a whole lot of that high performance building stuff going on, but we're still leaving behind a lot of the basics. And I kind of look at the basics. So now to answer your question, Tim.
Sure.
What do I do? You know, I think the first thing is I started out working as a helper for a remodeling contractor and ended up getting into consulting because I realized there was that huge disconnect in there. So in the process of doing that, we were doing online training back 15 years ago and online testing, but then the equipment or the applications were pretty weak, if you might put that way, or difficult, DOS and all that other kind of stuff. You know, now you just click a button and you got an application and you can do it. So I'm really big into the training. I feel like that the jobs that we get now that are not well done or that are poorly done aren't done because people don't want to do a good job. They're done because nobody's taken the time to show them how. And once again, going back to that podcast I just recently listed of yours, that's the point that you're making. And so I'm all in on that.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of online videos. I do videos. I have a couple of YouTube channels, one called Train to Build and another one, Bill Robinson. I'm Instagram under 504 Historic Windows, which is the area code for New Orleans. And I used to do and still do some window and door restoration work. And then the Bandana Bill one, which is the one you see on my head right now, is my other one that I try to push back and forth. And the whole idea is to share information. So I am not talking about how to put in a nano wall, you know, a big window wall thing. I'm talking about more about how to make it so it doesn't water leak. That's what my interest is, that last mile training kind of thing. So I do as much of that possibly can. I do the JLC shows. I do a lot of local stuff here. In fact, on Wednesday the 13th, I'm doing a thing for a local preservation resource center for homeowners on how to, how to identify moisture issues in your own home and simple do-it-yourself things, how to fix it. Because what we find is, especially in older homes, you let that little bit of thing go by, that little bit of leak, and then later on, next thing you know, it's instead of being a $50 repair, it's a $5,000 repair.
Right.
So I do a lot of that kind of stuff. I do some hands-on work still because I feel like as soon as I step off the field, I'm going to lose track of that, you know. So I go to a lot of people's houses. I do, like this afternoon, I'm going to look at somebody's house who has some old wood windows and the pocket door access where you get to the weights isn't there. And so I'm going to show him how to cut that in. Of course, I'm going to charge him for it. I think that
that's
you would
good.
Approve of that. You'd approve of that, right?
I would approve of that, yes.
I'm going to do money at it. And then another one of my kind of hands-on thing is I do a lot of, and I'm going to call them evaluations because I don't want people to think that I'm an inspector because I'm not licensed to do that.
Right.
But what I go to people's homes and I look for moisture issues where they've got condensation, microbial growth, because I'm not a licensed mold abatement person. So it's microbial growth and also to how to help make their homes more comfortable, efficient, and healthy. And kind of in that vein, the other thing that I'm looking at is I used to think that the most important thing was how do you lay out 16 inches on center for framing? How do you cut a stair? How do you cut a rafter? But now my opinion is the most important thing is occupant health. If we're not paying attention, that's like, wait a minute, you know, what's that all about? That's not, you know, that's not cool, but it is cool. If we're not giving our occupants good, healthy environments, then we're not doing our job when we've dropped the ball somewhere. Just because we put in a nice decor range or a nice range, you know, Wolf cooktop or a 12,000 CFM range hood, it's like, no, you know. Do we have makeup there? Anyway, on and on about that. Yeah, enough.
Okay, good. So a lot of stuff. Now, one of the things that I have found over the years is the changes in technology, if you will, have just escalated. I mean, the products, technology, scientific research on building science has just gone from, like, we do just build a house to, no, we measure stuff now. And that's one of the challenges that I've seen in the training is that, you know, a lot of times if we don't keep up with that, we're going to make some serious mistakes. But let's talk about moisture control. So can we really control moisture?
That's the $1 million question for the day, I think. Tim, so I'm not going to worry about semantics too much. You can call it moisture control, moisture management, moisture whatever. The whole issue is to be aware of the fact that moisture is a big issue. You know, I'm in a climate here where we get 60 inches of rain a year. The soil is wet. The humidity is really high. It's wet, wet, wet here. That's part of why I stayed here. And so even if we go to places where it only has 7 inches of rain a year and the low humidities, they still have moisture issues. They just don't rank them as high as that. So whatever you want to call it, there are ways to divert, deflect. There's something called the 4Ds, deflection, drainage, drying, and durability. There's a really good, simple metric to use to think about that. The 4Ds, that was actually developed up in Canada, deflection, drainage, drying, and durability. And if you think about those things, then you can manage it. You know, I mean, when I'm doing window demos at JLC, for example, you know, I talk about the number one thing to think about is everything should be installed in shingle style. Everything should be in shingle style. We can use all these peel and stick flashing tapes and all these other fancy things, which, by the way, there's some really cool stuff on the market now. The adhesives on the double-sided tapes, the self-adhesive flashings and all those kinds of things. It's really cool. The thing about it is they end up getting misapplied. So going back to answering your question, we can address and manage it and then build in such a way so that we can see where there are problems.
So let's just really quickly define the 4Ds a little bit. So we have deflection. What does that mean when it comes to moisture management?
Well, two simple things. First of all, roof overhangs. You know, roof overhangs make a big difference. There have been a lot of failures in the past when they didn't have roof overhangs. Production builders will do an upcharge if you want a roof overhang. Right. So it costs you a little bit more. So you want to deflect it. Another thing is that a simple one in the building code, there's a requirement that over the top of everything projecting proud of the plane of the wall needs to have a rigid head flashing. So we're projecting the water and moisture away from the wall. So that's deflection for me.
Okay, cool. New England is just full of houses with no overhangs, especially on the gable ends. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing to me why they don't. I guess because it costs more money. All right, what about drainage? What do you mean by drainage?
Well, once again, it's a slope, you know. I mean, we need to make sure things drain away. What I look at, here's a good example of that. In New Orleans, if you go look at porches, you're going to see a noticeable slope to the porch. You could not possibly lay a basketball on the front porch of a house in New Orleans because it's going to roll off. So you go to other climates, and it's not so much. And so that drainage, the other thing is the building code calls for drainage away from buildings, and we need to divert the water away. So that's just another part of that whole 4Ds. That's the second D. We need to drain, right?
Yeah, that's been that was kind of a big revelation to me back when I was building houses, was just the idea that a lot of basement leakage is the result of downspouts not being run properly off the property, and the water is sitting around. And they got like, wow, it's just common sense, but nobody does it, or they didn't do it. It's more so now.
As the world battles through the COVID-19 pandemic, one theme is constant throughout North America. How do we recover? Well, on Tuesday, May 19th, Remodelers Advantage is hosting the 2-hour online special Recovery 2020. Let's get ready to restart. This webinar will be a dual presentation with Doug Howard addressing the business side and Tim Fowler handling the production challenges. Visit remodelersadvantage.com/restart to register. Now back to the show.
All right, what about drying?
Ah, there you go. Rain screens. So kind of going back, on, there's a great book written by a guy named William Rose out of the University of Illinois called Water in Buildings. And I would recommend that be another book on the reading list, Water in Buildings by Rose. And one of the things he talks about was back in the 30s when they started putting insulation in houses, one of the first things that happened was painters would not paint houses that Painters would not paint houses that had insulation in the walls because the dynamic, the drying ability of the wall had been changed significantly. That interstitial, that cavity between the outside and the inside was open, and so it could dry. Then we started stuffing insulation in it. Now we jam pack it with insulation. So only way we can make that work if we want to protect the exterior cladding or siding is to decouple or push the exterior siding off the wall. So now you're starting to hear all kinds of rain screen rumblings out in the market. And a lot of manufacturers now are going ahead and making different kinds of products how to affect that drying capacity. So what this takes us to is when you hear somebody say a building needs to breathe, you know, step back, take a breath and say, well, I think it needs to dry. It doesn't need to breathe. But that's the way we used to do it, right?
Yeah. I remember joking with people about having a little bit of moisture in my basement in Maryland. And I said, oh, don't worry about it. There's so many holes in the house. It won't affect us anything. And then The last one is durability. What's that have to do with? What's that key?
Well, I think that there's several parts of that. You know, now we have a whole lot of manufactured cellular PVC and other kinds of composite building materials. Back in the day, here's the example. I go down to Bourbon Street, which I don't do very often, but when I go down to Bourbon Street and you look at all the fronts of the buildings, they're all right down on the curb, right on the sidewalk, all the wood with all the different stuff on there. And so you see builders now going down to the big box store and buying what I call 20-year wood, which is wood that took 20 years to grow rather than 200, and doing the same thing and sticking it right down on it. So that is not naturally decay resistant wood. It's really hard to find that now. And then because we have changed the drying dynamics of the walls, that just creates another kind of a situation. So we need to really pay attention to what kind of materials that we use, the durable materials. And it's not hard to find them. You just need to know what they are.
Okay, so good. The 4 Ds. Now, again, I've been going to JLC Live for a long time. I must not have sat in on enough of Bill's classes, but this is a great mechanism for me to help me think about moisture control. So I'm super psyched about this podcast. So let's assume that we can manage the water. Give us a quick, maybe a little bit of a scientific rundown on why we should care about this now. And the reason I bring this up is kind of like my house with all the holes in it. Like, we'll demo a house and there's no rot, there's no mold, but it has none of this stuff that we're talking about, you know? And so why do we need to care about this moisture stuff so much now in this day and age?
Because it ain't the way we used to do it. And that's why, you know, so the story is, just think about a wall. You know, back in the day, if your house was built before probably 1950, that there's probably no insulation in the walls. And so the wall could get wet and it could dry. It could get wet and it could dry. Now, when it gets wet, it can't dry anymore. So that's one thing that's happening. We've changed the way it used to be, if your house is old enough, it had plaster in it, and lath and plaster, or even blue board and plaster. Right. Now it's got paper face drywall, which has paper in it, which is, in one way to look at it, is mold candy, because it's all ground up cellulose stuff that will grow mold really well. So the reason we need to pay attention to it is we're building our homes tighter. Unfortunately, we have not provided enough training for our people on the job sites for them to understand that. And then the materials that are available now are so much different off the shelf than they used to be. A lot of times the materials I would suggest you use, you need to maybe special order, or they don't keep them in stock. So I think that, you know, why we need to do that now is because we've just changed. Homeowners have more expectations, higher expectations now than they had before.
Okay. And I guess one of the things you mentioned earlier was just health issues. And I know mold is a big thing for people nowadays. Trying to keep that from generating.
No question about it. I mean, I go to houses all the time, and I've got a bunch of photographs that I use in presentations and things about the microbial growth, Tim.
Right.
The microbial
growth. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So,
and where it is, but yeah, in New Orleans, 25% of the population has some sort of respiratory problem. And now when we look at what's going on today, people are a lot more aware of your respiratory issues. And so it's right. critical, you know, do yeah. we need to put a MERV filter in our houses now? And I go, yes. So,
okay. All right. So regions, let's just talk about regions a little bit. You've talked about New Orleans being real high humidity, a lot of rain. Other places, maybe Arizona, where it's more arid. Is this still an issue? Is this still something they should be thinking about in different parts of the country?
Well, a couple of things that happened, but first of all, I guess the short answer is absolutely yes. You're not going to get very many short answers out of me, Tim. but the issue here, and to put it in perfect perspective, I do a lot of work with a rebuild group here called Lower9.org. And so we get people from, and I'm going to use Ohio, and I hope I don't offend anybody from Ohio. People come down from Ohio or from how about we call it a heating climate, right? Down from a heating climate and then say, I'm an experienced journeyman carpenter, and I know how to build. And I go look and see what they did. And it's like, no, you got it wrong. Here's a simple example of that. On paper face, craft face, insulation, the question would be, and I'm not going to ask you to answer it, I'm going to pose it and then answer it myself because I don't want to trick you here.
Thank you.
I'll give you a little break here, buddy. Okay, so should you staple the paper to the face of the studs, or should you push the paper inside the studs so it's easier for the drywall guys to hang the drywall? And the answer is neither, because in our climate down here in climate zone 2, that paper, if it's going to be on there, that vapor control layer should be to the outside, because that's where the vapor drive is. So
no way.
Our vapor drive here is from the outside in. Your vapor drive, in the most of the cases, is from the inside out.
All right, I learned something else.
stick with me, Tim. I got a lot. Yeah. Okay, so that's a simple example. The other thing I think that we have to consider, as we build houses tighter, even in Arizona, where it's an arid climate, the thing about it is, as that house becomes more tightly constructed, it doesn't dry as well. And a little bit of a monsoon rain or something is going to cause moisture problems. If that moisture can't get out, it's going to stay. Okay. And it's going to reach a point where it's going to create microbial growth or even wood decay. Okay. Yes.
So, short answer, Bill, yes. When I was, I took a class on hanging windows when I was in business, and I learned a lot of things, but when I was when I had my business, there was a lot of discussion on taking the Tyvek and put it inside the frame of the window, or tape it up and bring it overside the flange of the window. Why is there opinions in building science? Shouldn't we just have a one-way fact? It just seems like there's a lot of different ways to do it. One's wrong, one's right. When you say shingle style, I guess that's a way to think about moisture to build.
Well, first of all, I got to say, Steve, is science a fact or an opinion? But I'm going to move on from that, right? Okay. So here's kind of what happened. If, you know, once again, you're going to get maybe a little longer form answer, but when we first started wrapping houses, you know, that the first back in the 30s, they were putting rosin paper and all kinds of things on the outside of the house to create some sort of a moisture control layer. And finally, they advanced to something called grade D paper, which is an asphalt saturated craft, right? Those usually came in 3, 4, 5, 6 foot rolls. And so you would wrap them around the building and you would put the window in. And then all of a sudden, we started getting these 10 foot rolls of manufactured house wrap. Okay, so now we wrap it over the window of the door. How do we modify the opening? And so the first idea was to cut an X and fold it in, and that seemed really, really good. But what happened was, if any water got in behind the top in the back of that house wrap, you know, or that moisture-resistant, water-resistant barrier, it would drain down, and that flap turned into the inside of the window, created a channel to draw the water in. It's like, oh my goodness, we can't do that. So it was started cutting with a V and a modified thing like that.
Yep.
So to me, that's not, it can be a discussion, but it's not one that is, you know, it is needs to be figured out. We got to sort it out.
A progression.
But I'm going to take it one step further, Steve.
Yeah.
Is that my point is, and because I've done a lot of window stuff, my point is that even on the sides and the sill, we should not fold the weather-resistive or water-resistive barrier inside those openings either, because if water can drain down from the top, what if we get water horizontally between the house wrap and the sheathing, and now we've got a 70-mile-an-hour wind on the outside? What's it going to do? And the pressure is less inside. It's going to push that water to the inside. So I say cut it back. Don't wrap it in to the sides and the sill. Don't do the same thing. One of those things is those house wraps are not rated for horizontal applications. And so you put it in a horizontal application. It's like, why are you doing that?
Yeah. And I guess a lot of my questions around the fact that how many houses have that Tyvek pulled into the, you know, with the X pulled into the top of the window frame.
Tons of them.
Yeah.
We got to always be on top of this to make sure we're continuously doing things right, you know?
Yeah.
Why it's so important what you do.
Okay, so we've already identified one of the things that may be a big concern out there. But so, Bill, what do you think are like maybe the most common mistakes that contractors make in terms of moisture control? Just and we've got enough time here where it could be a list of 10 or it could be two or three. I'm just kind of from your experience talking with people, seeing a lot of different places. What are some of those mistakes that people make?
Boy, there's a lot of parts here. Okay, so I think the first thing, and I thought about this a little bit because I have these discussions often. I think the biggest mistake that we make is that's the way we've always done it. I think that's what happens is that's the way we've always done it, you know. And we can't do it that way anymore. There's somebody here without mentioning a name who – their response to when somebody says that's the way we've always done it says, well, so you've been doing it wrong for the last 20 years. Well, not necessarily for the last 20 years, but certainly for the last 10. So that's the way we've always done it is, I think, the biggest mistake. And then coupled with that, though, is learning, because we have to learn somewhere. And that's why I think JLC and what you're doing and all this other stuff is so critical, because we have opportunities to find out places to learn. But the other thing is that who is teaching us? Is that somebody that's the way they've always done it? Is it somebody who's an open mind? And a quick example of that, and I know you didn't ask for it, but you're going to get it anyway, right? A quick example of that was I used to live in Arkansas for a while. And I know, don't just hold on to that, right? Okay, anyway, I lived in Arkansas and I worked for a contractor who was a great guy. We did a bunch of cool stuff. And he taught me how to hang doors. And the way you hang doors was, and you know, on a glass door, what you hold the glass in with is called a sticking. You know, on the newer doors, right. It's not glazing, it's called a sticking. And this guy told me that the sticking should always go to the inside. So I was hanging a door one day with a door that this family, this husband and wife's children had bought them the door, and it had a bunch of stuff on the front of it. It had a lot of carvings and things on it. So I'm hanging this door and I'm putting the sticking on the inside, right? And I've got all the cool tools and I've got all the planers and routers and all the things like that. And I get that door and I had it swinging the first time, man. It was perfect. And the homeowner walks up to me and said, Bill, isn't it backwards? Because all the emblems, all the embossing was to the inside. Because I had the stickings to the inside. So I'm going, this can't be right. Somebody built this door wrong. Right? It couldn't have been me. And so I called up the manufacturer and I said, hey, wait a minute, what's the deal on this? Is the sticking supposed to be on the inside or the outside? He said, it always goes on the outside. So I can't tell you how many doors I hung with the sticking on the wrong side. Now, as long as there's no embossing on the door, that's fine. So I think that the challenge there is that who are we learning from? What are they, you know, you kind of listen to a few keywords. And if a house needs to breathe and step back. Okay, so more things. Unless you wanted to step.
Yeah, maybe that's great, and that's a great answer. I love the we've always done it that way because it just isn't necessarily the right way just because it's always been done that way. But a little more technical. What do you think are some of those things that common mistakes that builders, remodelers make in terms of the moisture control issues?
Okay, so I mean, once again, there's a whole list of things that pop up into my head, and I think that compatibility of materials is a big issue, you know, using materials that are compatible. And there are examples of that where they put, because everything's chemistry now, right? Most of it is. And right. So that there's chemical components in some of these products that we use, especially the sticky stuff, whether it be self-adhesive flashing tape or even caulks and adhesives. Those kinds of things could have chemicals that could interact with other kinds of things. Once again, an example of that is the plasticizers that go in a lot of caulks and sealants can actually degrade or eat up certain kinds of plastic. And so that there are places where if you're using a caulk with a plasticizer in it and you've got a window with a flexible plastic in it, plastics that you can flex, it will actually, you know, it will erode it, it will decay it, it will eat it up. And so understanding compatibility, kind of one of the things that I'm going to pick on a little bit here too, I think, is people thinking about, as we tighten up these buildings, how do we need to change the materials that we use? And another example for that, me, is with nail guns. We use a lot of cordless finish or pin nailers, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
So it turns out that most of the ones that you buy are electro-galvanized nails. So an electro-galvanized nail is that nail that you see out there on the fence board when you drive by 6 months or a year later, where there's a teardrop by every nail. You can see it because that nail rusted. And so we need to be using either double hot dipped or hard galvanized nails or stainless steel nails. And so people are not looking at that. It goes back to that compatibility issue. And then things like shingle style, relying on manufacturer's instructions to tell you what to do. And I know that this isn't going to make most of my manufacturer friends happy, but I see a lot of times where a manufacturer will say, this is how you should install our product. And I've seen that they have modified the way you should install our product to kind of fit in with what people are always doing. And I'm going to give you one example of that too. When you're putting it on house wrap, you're supposed to use a button cap fastener, or you can use a 1-inch crown staple, right? And so I believe the reason that you can use a 1-inch crown staple is because a lot of the lathers and a lot of the people who do just weather-resistive or water-resistive barriers only use pneumatic 1-inch crown staples. And if they went to those people and said, you now have to use a button cap fastener, and say, we're not going to use it. So I think that's it. Shingle style, compatibility, the 4Ds is probably a big thing. People just not thinking about it.
Okay, wow. So without getting into like name brands and stuff like that, what kinds of products do you think are really key to managing moisture? And it might be, you know, again, maybe it's this house wrap does this that is better than the ones that don't, something like that. Is there anything like that that you can kind of point us to in terms of using the right materials?
And once again, because there's so much chemistry going on in building now, I think that that's absolutely the case. And just to let you know, one of the big things that we use a lot of are self-adhesive or peel and stick flashing tapes. And we started off with some some bitumen or asphalt-based products. And then we've evolved our way through in different kinds of things. Now we have acrylics. And acrylics, I think, are the best to go with. And so I would say that if you're using either a tape, whether it be a contractor's tape or a flashing tape, the acrylics are going to be better. They're going to stick better. They have better adhesion and all those other kinds of things. I think on house wraps, weather-resistive or water-resistant barriers, the issue there is, and I know that this is a debate now, Steve, this will be a debate, is that on the house wrap, there are some house wraps, a house wrap has to have some permeability for water molecules in the air to be able to pass through it. There's a certain number that's called for. Some of the materials that they make those manufactured house wraps out of are impermeable, they're like 6 mil visqueen. And so what they end up doing is putting small perforations in those holes. And the whole idea there is a lot of people will say, well, that's no good. You got a million holes in your wrap. And it's my opinion that if you've installed some of that budget wrap and it leaks, it's because you didn't do something else right. Maybe you needed to decouple and need to put a rain screen in. Because if you're not using rain screen now, come on, folks, let's get with it. So I think rain screen products, I think that the adhesives are good. You know, caulks and sealants, I got to do my little jam on caulks and sealants. There's 5 basic kinds: water, solvent, polyurethane, silicone, and modified polymer. Caulks, you got to use them in the right kind of place. Don't use a water-based painter's caulk on the outside of a house to caulk your siding. You know, use something else that's a high solids content. And so, looking at those things, so I guess the takeaway on that would be high solid contents caulk. good adhesion, good durability. One of the things that we don't know right now is on this testing, you know, something is warrantied for whatever amount of time. It's like, yeah, how long has the product been out? Well, we tested it for a year and we just got it on the market, but it's got a warranty. And by the way, I got to say that if you're buying a product based on the warranty, you're buying it for the wrong reason, right? If you have to rely on the warranty, it's like, you know, I just think that's false thinking. You know, you need to put it in right, make sure a product doesn't need a warranty, you know?
So Bill, is there any sort of place that, like, let's just say I'm a remodeler or a builder and I've got questions about a product, like my local lumberyard carries this product. I'm wondering if that does what they say it will do. Is there any place like a clearinghouse, like a website or any kind of a place where you can get good, reliable information on the products that are out there?
Well, yeah. In fact, you know, I'm going to put it at the top of the list, bill@traintobuild.com.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of other good stuff out there. JLC and Fine Home Building are actually excellent resources. I think that Building Science Corporation, the folks up there in Massachusetts that do a lot of good stuff, they're a little bit higher level. I think that manufacturers on some case are good. They're selling product. Another part about that is what I tell people, if you've got a problem with the product, don't call sales, call 1-800-TECH-SUPPORT.
Right.
Because the tech support people don't have it in their DNA to say anything other than what they know, right? And so I think that those are the kind of places to look. Conferences, of course. I mean, I think that conferences are invaluable. You've mentioned JLC. There's a bunch of other shows. There was a home performance conference that was supposed to have been here this last week. I had a chance to do a Zoom meeting on that. All those things are critical. You know, that what we miss with those live meetings, though, is that interaction, obviously, that we don't get. We're going to have to become used to seeing you on a screen rather than seeing you first up close, you know.
Well, hopefully that won't go on too long. So, Bill, we're going to wrap things up here. This has been, I got really excited a couple of times there, so you got me going. But give us again, like, I always want to let our guests that have something that would help them out, give us again what you have that might be good training for companies that are out there, and what does it focus on? I'm assuming it isn't how to put a 2x4 together, but it's more on the moisture control. And how do they get in touch with you about that?
Okay. Yes. Well, first of all, and there's never enough time in the day to do all the things I want to do, but I've got Instagram under Bandana Bill and 504 Historic Windows. I've got YouTube on Train to Build and Bill Robinson. I'm on LinkedIn. There's a lot of other stuff that I'm putting up in different kinds of places. bill@traintobuild.com. Anybody has a question, please. I'm delighted to be able to answer those to help collaborate. A lot of times manufacturers will give good information, but you always got to take that for a grain of salt.
Yeah.
My website is traintobuild.com.
Well, Bill, so good to see you. None of our listeners are going to see you, but I enjoyed seeing you for this short period of time, as well as super, super good information. And I really appreciate your taking a little bit of time to be with us today. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Maybe I can come back again sometime.
We'd love to have you.
We'd love it. Thank you, Bill.
All right, y'all. Take care. See ya. Bye.
Tim, I could probably talk to Bill for another 4 hours. I was really geeking out there.
Yeah. Yeah. This is so cool. Yeah. This is so cool. And you know, I think the listeners know that I genuinely get excited about new information, and I haven't really been in massive building construction mode for many, many years, and things have changed. But I love getting those little bit of tidbits that just say, "Ooh, wow, that's a new thing for me." I love the 4Ds. I just appreciate that way of being able to quantify how to look at the building envelope and look at the moisture control.
Yeah, and you know, my question around doing something, and he brought up a great point. It's how we've always done it, been doing it this way for 30 years. Will things change? And you know, there even the people at the lumberyard would always say, take the Tyvek in, wrap it in, you know?
Right.
So a lot of people were doing that wrong. So I don't think there's anything wrong. It's just continue to get education, continue to learn better ways to build and, you know, not just what you're doing, but question why you're doing things.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets into a lot of the his shingle style and having a framework.
Yeah. So I appreciate you bringing that back up because when I asked that question, I really wanted him to say, well, if you run the Tyvek a certain way and that answer, but that answer was dead on. This is the way we've always done it. And yeah. I've heard that over and over again through the years. It's a killer to efficiency. It's a killer to quality craftsmanship. It's a killer to moisture management. It's just one of those killers that unfortunately, maybe I've said a couple of times, you've probably said it a couple of times, but it really kills innovation, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. And it's I think it's a second cousin to It Is What It Is.
So. maybe we'll have to add that to the tagline.
All right.
Thank you so much,
well, once
Steve.
Again, we'd like to thank Bill Robinson for joining us, and we want to thank you always for listening to another episode of The Tim Fowler Show.
And remember, at The Tim Fowler Show, we're working hard to eliminate It Is What It Is, and we always did it that way from your vocabulary.
This has been another episode of The Tim Fowler Show. Want to hire Tim and fast-track your growth? Visit remodelersadvantage.com/consulting to learn more. And if you'd like more information about roundtables, our world-class peer advisory program, please send me an email at steve@remodelersadvantage.com. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the show and comment on iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.